From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Hong Kong's leader said Thursday that he stands ready to begin talks as soon as next week with student leaders of the protests that have plagued the city over the past 3 weeks. Chief Executive Leung Chun Ying said officials have been negotiating with the students over the past few days. Authorities said they're willing to discuss details of democratic reforms with the protesters. Meanwhile, Hong Kong's Legislative Council has returned to work after a hiatus taken during the protests. We have this report from the Chinese news agency, CCTV.
The Legislative Council of Hong Kong has resumed its weekly meeting focusing on the Occupy Central movement and the negative impact it brought on the city. Now, the meeting was to be held last Wednesday, but was postponed because of the protest. During the meeting, dozens of members supported a motion to set up a select committee to thoroughly investigate the Occupy Central movement, seeing the large-scale road blockages had seriously affected lives. Meanwhile, Hong Kong Security Bureau Chief has answered questions raised by some members about the police handling of the protest. Lai Tong Kwok says Hong Kong citizens enjoy freedom of expression, but must not compromise public order when exercising the right. He said police would act decisively and within the law against illegal behavior.
While the attention of the media here in the U.S. has been focused on congressional hearings regarding Ebola, a quiet shift in the control of the U.N. Security Council was underway in New York Thursday, with Venezuela, Angola, Malaysia, New Zealand, and Spain replacing Argentina, Rwanda, South Korea, Australia, and Luxembourg for two-year terms beginning this coming January. The council is composed of 15 members, five permanent members, China, France, the Russian Federation, the United Kingdom, and the U.S., and 10 non-permanent members elected for two-year terms by the General Assembly. In addition to the newly elected members and the so-called P5, next year's council will include Chile, Chad, Jordan, Nigeria, and Lithuania. Next year, one new council member, Venezuela, will also chair the non-aligned movement, whose more than 120 members represent nearly two-thirds of the UN member states and contain more than half of the world's population. This will mark the first time that one country has held both positions. Venezuela's foreign minister, Rafael Ramirez Carreño, spoke with the press after the vote.
Muy buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Venezuela ha sido elegida por una mayoría abrumadora de la Asamblea General de las Naciones Unidas.
Venezuela has been elected with an overwhelming majority of the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Para ocupar un puesto no permanente en el Consejo de Seguridad para el periodo 2015-2016.
To occupy a position of a non-permanent member of the Security Council for the period 2015-2016.
De 193 votos.
Out of 193 votes.
Uno fue nulo.
One null.
10 fueron abstenciones.
10 abstained.
Y de los 182 votos efectivos.
And out of the 182 effective votes.
Nuestro país obtuvo 181 votos de ellos.
Our country obtained 181 votes.
99.4%.
I.e. 99.4%.
Este triunfo contundente.
This overwhelming triumph.
Se produjo a pesar de la continuada campaña de descrédito contra nuestro país y nuestras instituciones.
Occurred despite the malign campaign against our country and our institutions.
Este rotundo triunfo.
This huge triumph.
Es el resultado de una decisión del comandante presidente Hugo Chávez Frías.
Is the result of the decision of Commander Hugo Chávez, President Commander Hugo Chávez Frías,
cuando en enero del 2007 decidió postular a Venezuela como candidato.
When in January 2007 decided to present the candidature of Venezuela.
Y es evidencia del respaldo mundial.
and it shows the international support
que continúa teniendo su mensaje de paz, solidaridad y justicia social.
That remains towards our position of peace, security and international peace and solidarity.
Este triunfo se lo dedicamos al comandante Chávez.
Therefore, this triumph is dedicated to Commander Hugo Chávez.
También constituye...
It also represents...
el resultado del arduo y sostenido esfuerzo desplegado por el presidente Nicolás Maduro.
The result of a long and sustained effort conducted by President Maduro.
Cuando decidió avanzar en la arena internacional,
when he decided to move forward in the international arena,
con su modelo de resolución pacífica de los conflictos, que ha tenido tanto éxito a nivel nacional,
with its model of the peaceful settlement of conflict that has been so successfully domestically,
el éxito histórico alcanzado por la República Bolivariana de Venezuela,
the historic success achieved by the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela,
pone de manifiesto el amplio apoyo internacional del cual goza nuestra revolución,
shows clearly the wide support that our revolution has from the international community,
como promotora de la paz, de la justicia social, de la solidaridad y de los derechos humanos,
as a supporter of peace, of social justice, solidarity and respect of human rights.
La comunidad internacional ha respaldado la lucha incansable del gobierno bolivariano.
The international community has backed the tireless fight of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela
en contra de la injerencia en los asuntos internos de los estados,
against the intervention of internal affairs of the states,
así como el uso de medidas coercitivas unilaterales de carácter económico,
as well as the use of coercive and unilateral measures against countries
de carácter económico, político y de otra índole para restringir los derechos de las naciones a la libre determinación.
Measures of economic, political, and other types to restrain the free will of the countries.
Una vez más se demuestra,
once again, it's been demonstrated
que la Organización de las Naciones Unidas pertenece a todos.
That the Organization of International States belongs to all the countries.
En el 2015, Venezuela,
in 2015, Venezuela
se convertirá en el primer país en la historia,
will become the first country in history
en ocupar una silla en el Consejo de Seguridad,
in occupying a position in the Security Council
y la presidencia del Movimiento de Países No Alineados de manera simultánea,
and at the same time will chair the non-aligned movement simultaneously.
Nunca antes se le había concedido un país tal responsabilidad.
Never before such a responsibility has fallen on a country at the same time.
Asumimos este reto.
We take up this challenge.
Determinados a luchar en contra del sometimiento de los pueblos a la subyugación.
Determined to continue our fight against the willingness to subject countries to the subjugation,
la dominación, la explotación y la ocupación extranjera,
domination, exploitation and foreign occupation,
y la denegación de los derechos humanos fundamentales,
and the denial of fundamental human rights.
Venezuela será ahora,
Venezuela will then become,
más que nunca,
more than ever,
una voz activa en la defensa de la igualdad soberana de las naciones,
an active voice to defend the equal behavior of nations or rights of nations,
en particular,
especially,
de los derechos inalienables de los pueblos del sur al desarrollo y la paz,
of the inalienable rights of the countries of the South to development and peace.
Finalmente, quiero agradecer en nombre de nuestro gobierno.
Finally, on behalf of our government, we would like to express our gratitude.
El apoyo de todos los países del grupo de Latinoamérica, el Caribe.
For the support of the, all the countries of Latin America and the Caribbean region.
Y de todos los países que de manera tan contundente confían en nosotros.
And of all the countries that in such a strong manner believe in us.
Agradecer también.
I would like to take the opportunity to also thank
el trabajo de nuestro embajador ante las Naciones Unidas, Samuel Moncada.
The work performed by our representative to the UN, Samuel Moncada.
Y de todos los equipos de trabajo que han hecho posible esta victoria para el pueblo venezolano.
And to thank the hard work of all the teams that have made a reality this to all the Venezuelan people.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.
Malaysia's Prime Minister Najib Abdul Razak also spoke with the press when the session was over.
Good afternoon. The election for the 5 non-permanent members of the Security Council for a term 2015-2016 have just been concluded. 6 countries, namely Angola, Malaysia, New Zealand, Spain, Turkey, and Venezuela, contested for the 5 available seats. And I wish to inform you that Malaysia received a total of 187 votes from 192 UN member states that voted today. As such, I am pleased to announce that Malaysia has secured a seat and will serve on the Security Council from 1st January 2015 to 31st December 2016. Alongside Malaysia, Angola, New Zealand and Venezuela has been elected, and Spain and Turkey will go for the second round. The support received by Malaysia is more than the two-thirds majority vote, that is 128 votes, required from 192 countries that had voted today for the election of the Security Council. On behalf of the government and the people of Malaysia, I wish to express our heartfelt appreciations and thank all UN member states for supporting and voting for Malaysia. The number of votes received bears testimony to Malaysia's long-standing reputation as a responsible member of the international community, particularly in the context of international peace and security. Furthermore, the resounding number of votes provides Malaysia with a solid platform of support and credibility as it embarks on its membership of the Security Council. At this stage, I wish also to express Malaysia's deep appreciations for the endorsements by members of regional groupings, and in particular by ASEAN, by the Asia-Pacific Group, and by the Gulf Cooperation Council. These endorsements were instrumental in boosting Malaysia's chances of being supported by other regional groups, which is reflected in the outcome of the elections today. We are also greatly appreciative and humbled by the trust and solidarity demonstrated by the larger UN membership in supporting Malaysia's UNSC bid. Moving forward, we are fully cognizant of the expectations placed on Malaysia as a member of the UNSC. We reaffirm the pledge to work together with other council members, the wider UN membership, as well as with other partners and stakeholders in fulfilling the mandate of the Council and in upholding the Charter of the United Nations for the common good of all. In terms of priorities, as a member of the UNSC, Malaysia aims to, among others, continue advocating the vision for peace and moderation, promote mediation as an approach towards peaceful conflict resolution, promote the enhancements of peacekeeping operations, promote peace building through technical support for countries emerging from conflict, and to encourage continued discussion on reform of the Security Council. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank the Honourable Prime Minister of Malaysia, Dato Sri Mohamed Najib Tun Razak, for his guidance and leadership in Malaysia's UNSC campaign. I further would like to thank Wisma Putra's team for their hard work and dedication for the past few years, particularly in the lobbying effort to secure a seat in the Security Council. I also like to add my thanks to the various ministries and agencies which supported Malaysia's UNSC lobbying efforts. As you're all aware, 2014 has been a year of terrible tragedy and heartbreak for Malaysia. In the wake of the twin tragedies of MH370 and MH17, Malaysians from all walks of life have come together to stand together and unite behind the nation. It is my hope that Malaysia's election to the UNSC will similarly unite all Malaysians, particularly as we pursue the interests in the realm of international peace and security as a member of the Security Council. I thank you all.
New Zealand's Foreign Minister, Murray McCulley, spoke with the press for less than a minute.
On behalf of the government and people of New Zealand, I just want to express our appreciation of the vote of confidence that we've had from the UN membership this morning. Our country is obviously touched to have been given such a strong vote. We are a small nation. We run for this office maybe every 20 years, and to receive the success we have this morning means a lot to us, and we will work very hard to make sure that we give good service on the Council. Thank you.
Under the UN Charter, the Security Council has primary responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security. All UN member states are obliged to comply with Council decisions. The Security Council is responsible for determining the existence of threats to the peace or acts of aggression. The Security Council can impose sanctions and/or authorize the use of force to maintain or restore international peace and security. Together with the General Assembly, it also selects the judges of the International Court of Justice. In all of those areas, the new majority appears poised to make the Council more responsive to the concerns of developing nations and the non-aligned bloc, and has the potential to bring the influence of rising regional blocs, such as the BRICS countries, who also hold two of the permanent seats, and African, Asian, and Latin American groupings to the fore, at the expense of the U.S. and the EU, which have held majorities on the Council for many years. We will be following this as it develops. Also at the UN, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon returned from his tour of Gaza and Israel and presented his findings to the press on Thursday.
As you know, I just returned from my week-long trip to the Middle East. I carried twofold messages: spare no effort to rebuild Gaza, and spare no time to jumpstart peace talks. I traveled to Gaza 2 days ago to survey the needs for myself. I saw whole communities destroyed and an economy in ruins. I met with the parents of some of the more than 500 children killed in the fighting. I heard heartbreaking accounts of epic loss. So many people are homeless with winter approaching. At the reconstruction conference in Cairo, the international community showed its solidarity by pledging $5.4 billion. We must turn those commitments into tangible assistance. I also visited a kibbutz in southern Israel and met with the family of a four-year-old boy named Daniel, who was killed by a Hamas rocket. I visited also a tunnel discovered months before the fighting and years in the making. I fully understand the security threat from rockets above and tunnels below. At the same time, the scale of the destruction in Gaza has left deep questions about proportionality. I left the region with a heavy heart, but measure of hope. As I entered Gaza on Tuesday, so did the first shipment of critical building materials under a UN-brokered mechanism. I urge both sides to continue to implement this temporary mechanism in good faith. The Gaza situation is a symptom of a larger problem, the stalemate in the Middle East peace process. People are understandably disillusioned with a decades-long effort that has failed to deliver a final deal. I know that the trust has been eroded and unilateral actions look tempting. But the two-state solution is the only way to end the senseless cycle of war. The international community has an obligation to press for peace, and I want to once again commend the efforts of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. I reiterate my strong concern about provocations at Jerusalem's holy site, which only inflame tensions at a time when the parties need to find their way back to the negotiating table. Ladies and gentlemen, I remain alarmed at the situation in Syria. I once again call for steps to prevent the massacre and protect the civilians in Kobani. But let us remember that civilians across Syria are under imminent threat. In addition to the barbarity of ISIL or Daesh, the Syrian government continues to indiscriminately attack populated areas, including with the barrel bombs. The Daesh phenomenon in Syria is a consequence, not the cause, of the conflict. Daesh will continue to threaten Syria unless the deep political drivers of the conflict are resolved through a credible and comprehensive process. Let me now turn to the Ebola outbreak. Ebola is a huge and urgent global problem that demands a huge and urgent global response. The people and governments of West Africa are demonstrating significant resilience, but they have asked for our help. Dozens of countries are showing their solidarity, but we need to turn pledges into action. We need more doctors, nurses, equipment, treatment centers, and medevac capacities. I appeal to the international community to provide the $1 billion launch that will enable us to get ahead of the curve and meet our target of reducing the rate of transmission by December 1st. The United Nations system has mobilized to meet this monumental task. We have established UNMEER, the United Nations Mission for Ebola Emergency Response, to coordinate and scale up action. I have also formed a global Ebola response coalition. Ebola can be beaten if we work together effectively. We all have responsibility to act. I salute the courage of the medical and support personnel working on the front lines. I offer condolences to the family of Abdel Fadel Mohamed Bashir, a laboratory technician and a member of the United Nations family from Sudan who died this week from Ebola. He was the second person from the United Nations mission in Liberia to succumb to this unforgiving disease. Meanwhile, peacekeeping personnel continue to face other dangers. Two UNAMID peacekeepers were killed today in an attack in Darfur. This has been a bloody October for UN peacekeeping. In Darfur, Mali, and the Central African Republic, we have lost 14 peacekeepers in hostile acts, nearly one per day. This highlights the exceptionally challenging environment in which today's peacekeepers operate. Blue helmets, must be allowed to undertake their life-saving work without interference. Ladies and gentlemen, finally, if you allow me, I would like to draw your attention to my tie today. I almost wear always UN blue. On one occasion last year, I wore an orange tie to show my support for the UN's campaign to end violence against women. Today, my tie and socks are all, yes, I can show you. All purple. The color of choice for Spirit Day, which is observed in the United States and many other countries as a day of solidarity with the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth who face bullying and discrimination. Through the UN's Free and Equal Campaign, the United Nations will continue to speak out against the homophobia and speak up for the human rights of all LGBT people. I thank you for your attention.
This week's commentary from imprisoned journalist and political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal looks at the current Ebola scare in the U.S. and what he called the real health crisis in the country.
With the death of Mr. Thomas Duncan shortly after his arrival from Liberia, West Africa, the Ebola crisis has burst into millions of news screens, generating deep levels of fear and xenophobia. To be sure, Ebola is a serious health concern, for it has a 70% mortality rate, named after a river in Congo near the first known outbreak in 1976. It's also known as hemorrhagic fever. But to beat back the fear, public officials have been playing down the threats posed by the virus, often armed with little more than hope and false confidence. For politics, often more imagery than reality, is a poor barrier against the seriousness of viruses, disease, and death. This isn't about the Ebola crisis. It's about the American healthcare crisis, made possible by a flawed business model that prioritizes profit above all other things, even life itself. Consider this. When Mr. Duncan first entered Texas Presbyterian Hospital, he was interviewed by a screener, prescribed antibiotics, and sent home. That person, that screener, was more likely than not a medically trained healthcare professional, but a receptionist perhaps armed with a checklist to cover. Chances are she was perhaps the lowest paid staff until one considers the janitorial workers. This business model, one followed by most institutions in America, is now exposed as ineffective, dangerous, and the least health conscious. That was a business decision driven by the bottom line of money, not life. Similarly, the recent crisis has exposed how vulnerable nurses are in this system, for the business perceives them as less valuable than doctors. Hence, they are paid less, trained less, protected less, and work more. Who spends more time with ailing patients, doctors or nurses? Who has the closest physical contact with patients? But according to published accounts, nurses had their necks exposed, and when they complained, were told to use tape to cover up. This is a system that protects profits and prestige, not people. For doctors, get the most protection, nurses the least. When Ebola first struck West Africa, the U.S. mobilized soldiers to go there. Cuba, which has advanced biotechnical medical expertise with tropical diseases, sent over 1,000 doctors to help treat and heal people. Little socialist Cuba has sent over 135,000 healthcare professionals to 154 countries, more than the United Nations World Health Organization. Their Latin American medical school in Havana trains thousands of poor medical students from all over the world for free. Not much of a business model, but one hell of a human model.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.